Welcome to Light in the Land, where we illuminate the Bible within the context of the land of Israel. Each week, we uniquely dive into biblical passages using archaeology, history, geography, customs and culture of the biblical period, and the Hebraic background of Jesus, guiding you along ancient paths and into biblical towns and landscapes is Dr. John DeLancey. He serves as the founder and director of Biblical Israel Ministries and Tours, and has led over 90 Israel study trips to date, as well as participated in many archaeological digs. We pray this program connects you to the land, deepens your understanding of the Bible, and inspires your walk of faith in Christ.
Shalom, hello, and welcome to Light in the Land, where we discover the Bible through the lens of Israel's physical settings. Thanks for joining us today for this, what I think will be a very unique biblical passage, where we will talk about it within the context of archaeology, historical geography, and the customs and culture of the Bible. The story that we're going to focus upon in this program is from 2 Samuel chapter 20. And let me say that if I would be preaching this text in a sermon, I would probably entitle it, "Don't Lose Your Head." Don't lose your head. You'll know what I mean as we unfold this story together. Now, you don't have to spend much time in your Bible to realize that wisdom is a significant theme in both the Hebrew Bible and the New Testament Christian scriptures. Used over 150 times, the word in Hebrew, chokmah, is the most frequently translated word as wisdom. Solomon, of course, taught that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. This is Proverbs chapter 9, verse 10. The starting point of living by chokmah or wisdom is having an accurate view of God. And being a wise person is not, as you know, the same as being a smart person. Possessing both wisdom and knowledge, of course, are a necessary combination if we want to live our lives in footstep with God. In fact, in an excerpt from the Ligonier Ministries website, the late R.C. Sproul once said, and I quote, "This wisdom is not equivalent to knowledge of facts. One can know a lot of information and still be a fool. Yet we must note that it is impossible to be wise and ignorant, for wisdom is the right application of knowledge, specifically the knowledge of God. Wisdom may not be the same as knowledge, but without knowledge, wisdom can't exist." This chapter explores the value of wisdom through one of the most, I think, obscure and, let's be honest, one of the more gruesome stories of the Bible. It is one of these stories that makes you scratch your head and ask, "I wonder why this story made it into the Bible." Well, that's a legitimate question. But a deeper look into this passage of 2 Samuel chapter 20 and into the historic context, combined, of course, with some archaeological and cultural background, I think and I hope will unlock this narrative for us today. Of course, as we unfold this story together, we also hope that we'll learn some chokmah, some Hebrew, along the way. So let's place this narrative of 2 Samuel 20 in its geographic context. The primary site that's mentioned in this text is a site called Abel Beit Ma'aka. It is located literally on the northern border of Israel. Now, this Old Testament site is slightly over just a mile south of Israel's northern city in a region called the Finger of the Galilee. And this city would be Metula today. However, because of the unique border configuration here, you can see a nearby section of Lebanon from the top of Abel Beit Ma'aka. And in fact, Lebanon is just 100 yards from the northern end of the site. Now, I had a chance to help with the excavation over a two-week period. I think this was maybe 5 or 6 years ago now. And it was interesting to know that the border with Lebanon was that close. But a mile west of this border site rise the hills of Naphtali, as mentioned in Joshua chapter 19. And a few miles to the east of the site is Tel Dan, a more established site, excavated for decades now. But still further beyond Tel Dan, along the slopes of the Golan Heights, is Caesarea Philippi. So Abel Beit Ma'aka's strategic location along the primary north and south trade route on the northern end of the Hula Valley that extends to the north of the Sea of Galilee, incidentally, really testifies to the importance of this site's location throughout biblical history. The site is about 25 acres in size, a fairly good site. And of course, this is where the story of 2 Samuel 20 took place. Now, historically, the presence of the site extends back through the middle and late Bronze periods. The city is mentioned simply as Abel. However, in the later set of the Egyptian execration texts, they date from the 19th and the 18th centuries BC. Abel is also listed, interestingly enough, among the cities conquered by this Egyptian pharaoh in the 15th century. His name was Thutmose III. He was one who bragged about his 18 or so military campaigns up through and really beyond this city. The full name of Abel Beit Ma'aka appears only 3 times in the Bible. 1 Kings 15:20, if you're taking notes, 2 Kings 15:29, and of course in our story of 2 Samuel 20. The city was an unconquered Canaanite city in the days of Joshua and was referred simply to as Ma'aka in the biblical text of Joshua 13. In later centuries, the king of Ma'aka and 1,000 of his soldiers, along with Aramean forces, served a mercenary role in helping the Ammonites in their battle against David. This is recorded in 2 Samuel 10. Joab, and he'll be, of course, mentioned in this text of 2 Samuel 20 in just a moment. He was David's general, but he battled and defeated the Ammonites in a battle on the east side of the Jordan River. So these mercenary troops from Ma'aka were probably from our site, Abel Beit Ma'aka. Now, it's difficult to assess the ethnicity of the city during David's time, given that the biblical record, as well as the archaeological evidence, doesn't provide definitive answers. The city may not have been Aramean or Israelite, but rather, as suggested by a few people I know, as an independent ethnic community. Now, one thing's for sure, that during David's reign, it was a prominent and strategic city here in the northern Hula Valley. So after David's time, it seems as though the Arameans and the Israelites exchange control of the city, as hinted by 1 Chronicles chapter 19, verse 6. The city was renamed Aram Maacah, and this makes it difficult to determine exactly when this apparent exchange of control took place. Although the archaeological discoveries here have indeed shed some light on this question. Eventually, the city was once again controlled by Israel, only to be destroyed by Tiglath-Pileser, the king of Assyria, along with the other cities in the area. This would include Ayon, Yanoah, Kadesh, and Hazor, according to 2 Kings 15. Serving as the primary buffer cities against an attack from the north, all of these cities were destroyed in 733 BC, with the entire kingdom of Israel eventually falling 11 years later in 722 to another Assyrian king named Sargon II. Working jointly, the Azusa Pacific University and Hebrew University of Jerusalem have been excavating the Abel Beit Ma'akah site since 2013. It's been a pleasure of mine to get to know, during my 2 weeks of helping with the dig, a gentleman named Dr. Robert Mullins. He's the chair and professor of Azusa Pacific University's Department of Biblical and Religious Studies. Well, he believes that the city served as an urban center from the late 11th century through the early 10th century. But from the Iron Age I, which technically begins around 1200 BC, and through the Iron Age II period, which begins in about 1000 BC, according to conventional chronology, a public complex used for cultic ritual purposes was uncovered, and this is an important dynamic that lends importance in our story. This included mesabot, or standing stones, basins, a cultic stand, and a stone offering table. Archaeologists also found a clay jar containing 425 ankle bones of sheep, goats, and deer. The technical word is astragali. Now, other astragali that have been found elsewhere throughout the ancient world may have been used as, and this is interesting, I think, as pieces for a game. However, some would suggest that these may have been also used for divination. For example, the casting of lots to forecast the future. According to the scholars who suggest this, when these bones are found together in a hoard, they are most likely used for this purpose of divination. And even though this hoard of astragali date about a century after the 2 Samuel 20 story, we might conjecture still that Abel Beit Ma'akah was a divination center for seeking wisdom and guidance. Keep this possibility in mind when we come to the story in just a moment. But may I just add one more detail archaeologically about the site, because it adds context. And again, this program is all about looking at the biblical text through the lens of the physical settings of Israel. Now, during its history, the city went through a destruction and rebuilding phase. The rebuilt city lasted into the 9th century BC, And during the 2017 archaeological season, a small 2-inch figurine head of a bearded man was actually found in the citadel. That is actually displayed even as we speak in the Israel Museum. It's a figurine of either, and these are the suggestions, Ahab, the king of Israel, Haziel, the Aramean king, or Ben-Hadad. So now the story. At the time of this story of 2 Kings 20, David is the king, of course serving in Jerusalem, and a Benjaminite, a troublemaker named Sheba, he's the one who rose up and revolted against the king. Now, while all the men of Judah stayed loyal to David, all the men of Israel followed Sheba. And, of course, this led to a threatened rebellion. Can you sense the start of an uprising, a political, potential civil war? So we pick up the story with David in his palace that has been found archaeologically, by the way, in the city of David. And this was the plan to deal with Sheba, this troublemaker, and the chase and the confrontation begin. Here is the story. Then the king said to Amasa, "Call the men of Judah together to me within 3 days and be here yourself." So Amasa went to summon Judah, but he delayed beyond the set time that had been appointed him. And David said to Abishai, "Now Sheba, the son of Bichri, will do us more harm than Absalom." If you recall, Absalom is or was David's son. "So take your Lord's servants and pursue him, lest he get himself to fortified cities and escape from us." And there went out after him Joab's men and the Cherethites and the Pelethites and all the mighty men. And they went out from Jerusalem to pursue Sheba, the son of Bichri. So now we trace Sheba on his northern route to Abel Beit Ma'akah and the most northern edge of David's kingdom. Joab and his men followed him there. So Sheba, as the text continues, passed through all the tribes of Israel to Abel of Beit Ma'akah, and all the Bichrites assembled and followed him in. And all the men who were with Joab came and besieged him in Abel of Beit Ma'akah. They cast up a mound against the city, and it stood against the rampart. In other words, this was a siege ramp. Incidentally, the year that I was excavating, that was one thing that we were looking for. It has not been found yet. But then, this is where the story gets interesting, a wise woman. Remember the word chokmah, the word for wisdom, plays an important role in this story. And it's the wise woman who called from the city, quote, "Listen, listen, tell Joab, come here, that I may speak to you." And he came near her, and the woman said, "Are you Joab?" And he answered, "I am." Then she said to him, "Listen to the words of your servant." And he answered, "I am listening." Then she said, "They used to say in former times, let them but ask counsel at Abel, and so they settled a matter. I am one of those who are peaceful and faithful in Israel. You seek to destroy a city that is a mother in Israel. Why will you swallow up the heritage of the Lord?" Joab answered, "Far be it from me, far be it, that I should swallow up or destroy. That is not true. But a man of the hill country of Ephraim, called Sheba, the son of Bichri, has lifted up his hand against King David. Give up him alone, and I will withdraw from the city. And the woman said to Joab, Behold, his head shall be thrown to you over the wall. Then the woman went to all the people in her wisdom, and they cut off the head of Sheba, the son of Bichri, and threw it out to Joab. So he blew the trumpet, the shofar, the ram's horn, and they dispersed from the city, every man to his home. And Joab returned to Jerusalem to the king. So let's unfold this story and ask ourselves, why do you think Sheba traveled all the way north to Abel Beit Ma'aka? Now, he may have thought sheer distance would provide safety, or he may have taken refuge in Abel Beit Ma'aka because it was considered a peaceful city, as we read from the text in verse 19. But additionally, he may have gone there to seek wisdom and direction. As the text says, the city was regarded as, quote, a mother in Israel, where people could come to get their answers. Is it possible Sheba went all the way north to this city to get his answers from this wise woman? And perhaps another question that begs an answer, as we talk about context, we ask the question, well, who was this wise woman? This is one of those times we like more details, of course, in the biblical story. And yet, while we cannot be sure, she might have been a leading public figure in the city who dispensed wisdom through divination. You see how the archaeological discovery in the past few years lends context to this suggestion. And that perhaps is a good suggestion because to me it's intriguing to note that parallels in the late Bronze culture about the role of women in divination has been illustrated by Nava Cohen, the co-director of the Abel Beit Ma'aka excavation. She said, quote, interestingly, wise women, sometimes termed old women, are also mentioned in late Bronze Age Hittite texts as ritual experts who operated based on folk knowledge, practicing a range of divinatory and magical tasks, which included fertility rites, healing, and protection against plague or other misfortunes. So let's just say that if Sheba had gone to Abel Beit Ma'aka to seek wisdom and to gain direction and protection from this wise woman, he didn't find what he was looking for. In the end, his severed head would be tossed to Joab, David's general, and that's the end of the rebellion. Could you imagine standing below the steep slopes of the city, and all of a sudden a head is thrown down to you? Joab and his men were satisfied that justice had been executed, and they returned to Jerusalem 120 miles south. Archaeologically, to date, the siege ramp, suspected to be on the north end of the site, has not been found, as I previously mentioned. However, additionally, the city walls from the 11th and 10th centuries have also not been uncovered either. But the only city walls so far uncovered have been from the Canaanite period. However, based on my last visit to the site, I believe they found a very impressive gate complex from the Iron Age or the Israelite period. Now, as you listen to this story unfolding in the context of archaeology, history, and culture, perhaps you can conclude that this story is primarily about simply the rebellion of Sheba and the consequences of his insurrection. We are not told why he rebelled. Perhaps he thought King David favored the Judeans more than the other tribes of the kingdom. That's a possibility. Whereas we also cannot be sure if Sheba genuinely sought after godly wisdom from the wise woman in Abel Beit Ma'akah, or if he was seeking some kind of oracle or traditional advice. But one thing was for sure, he did not submit to God, nor did he honor God's anointed. For us, there is a significant difference between seeking earthly wisdom and godly wisdom. The book of James, chapter 1, verse 5, says, "If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given him." To grow in our walk of faith, we must search for wisdom that is rooted in the ways of God. Proverbs 3 reminds us of this truth. "Blessed is the one who finds wisdom, and the one who gets understanding." Answers to life's big questions can be found only through the truth of the Bible as we trust and seek after God. When troubles and challenges come, seeking godly wisdom is the sure pathway that leads to life. Let's just say it is the best way to keep one's head on straight.
Thank you for joining us for this program. We hope it was enlightening and inspiring. If you have questions, you can email Dr. John DeLancey at drjohn@biblicalisraeltours.com. We invite you to visit our website, biblicalisraeltours.com, where we have resources about Israel and the Bible. Select images from today's program, along with links to our YouTube channel featuring on-location teaching videos from the land of Israel. Additionally, our site also has information about upcoming trips throughout Israel and other biblical lands. A tour of the Holy Land will transform the way you read and understand the Bible, as it has for thousands of others. Until next time, thanks for listening, and Shalom.